Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
Hi, I'm Paul Listick, and welcome to Behind the Curtain.
I had so many doubts about auditioning for America's Got Talent, but my fiance Casey, she believed in me and she pushed me to go for it. And she tells me that she thinks that I'm the best magician in the world. She really believes it, especially when I don't, because I definitely don't.
You know that name. It's huge. It's huge in the magic world, and now, of course, huge in the world of entertainment. Hi, everybody, and welcome to Behind the Curtain, where this week we're going to spend some time with the amazing and incredible Shin Lim. He is coming to Chicago at the Auditorium Theater on Saturday, March 14th. I'll tell you now and I'll tell you later to get your tickets. I kind of looked online and it's selling really well, but we're going to talk to him and kind of get all ready for it. Shin, thank you so much for joining me.
Oh, hey, how's it going? Thanks for having me.
Sure. Now, this is going to be your first appearance, as far as I know, performing in Chicago, right? Have you been to the Auditorium Theater before?
Yes. I've actually never been to Chicago before. This is going to be my first time.
Well, I hope you're allowing yourself a few days, because you're about to fall in love with this city.
Oh, I can't wait. It's going to be great.
And that means you've never been in the Auditorium Theater before. You know, it holds about 4,000 people. I've been on that stage. I performed on that stage.
Oh, wow.
And I got to tell you, when you look out from that stage before you start, assuming you go in for kind of a rehearsal, whatever, you're going to just, your mouth is going to drop.
Wow. I can't wait. That sounds amazing.
Absolutely gorgeous. And I will be in the audience watching you. Hey, so I want to chat with you. You are coming here, but of course, anybody that watches AGT, I don't think they produced anybody more famous than you at this point. You won the regular show. You won the champions. I also am a huge fan of Fool Us, so you fooled Penn and Teller.
Oh, yeah.
But what I found interesting, the reason I opened with the clip that I did is because it's almost as though everybody believes more in you than you believe in you, that you're that good. Talk to me about that.
I mean, I just feel like I'm just doing close-up magic. I'm not really doing anything, like, spectacularly crazy. I mean, there were just so many acts that were there that were doing either death-defying stunts or just things that I felt were much more difficult than magic. So that's just why I was, like, I don't know. I just didn't feel like it was, like, matched. I don't know.
So you,
this is my opinion, but
when you talk about your work, you describe it more as an artistic show. It's not, you're not out to trick people. Mm-hmm. You're not out to, it's really about art. And I know, I think if I have this right, you've actually likened what you do to the movie Inception. Am I getting that right?
Yeah, that's 100% correct. I really view my magic like almost like a movie, and has a beginning, middle, and end. Each act has a beginning, middle, and end. Each act has a story. Each act is either really abstract or pretty straightforward. So it's like, I don't really like to view it as like, oh, I fooled you. You didn't know how I vanished that card. Cause I just feel like people kind of, I don't know, I guess get turned away when they feel like they're getting tricked by a magician, you know, it's not a good feeling.
Yeah, now,
I just wanted to have a sense of wonder rather than that.
And that you certainly create. I mean, I know you and Colin did a thing on AGT a couple of weeks ago during the champions. I'm not sure when that got, well, I guess it was live. And it was, I have one of the producers I work with just saw you in Vegas a week ago or so. He did not know who you were. He doesn't watch AGT. He just said, oh, it was recommended. So I went, as he heard me talking about this, I was getting ready to do the interview. And I made him go watch the clip of you and Colin on set doing what you're doing. He's watching it now, as we say. And he told me, he said, you were totally amazing. You just totally wowed him. He says, I just like magic. I heard this guy was good.
Nice. Well, that's good. I'm glad he liked it.
And for those of us that are going to see you here in Chicago, by the way, will it just be you? Will Colin Cloud be with you?
Nope. Colin's with me. Colin's pretty much my co-star.
Okay.
We've been performing now for, well, we did Broadway together about a year ago. And then 3 years ago, we did New Zealand together as well. And we met for the first time 10 years ago. So we've known each other for a while now, and we've actually followed each other's work. But this is our first time ever actually like working side by side together, which has been awesome.
Well, I think it's amazing. Well, consider me the Howie Mandel of the group. You need somebody to come up, just yell my name out. I'll come right up to you.
Okay. Sounds good.
Hey, so I know when you people that know something about you, because you have talked about these things, know that your first love was actually piano, and not magic, and you developed carpal tunnel syndrome, and you kind of got sick. But it was your brother Yi who got you into the magic. Is that right?
That is correct. Yeah, around 16 years old, he showed me a really, really simple card trick. It's called the flip force, and he taught it to me. He's like, "Oh, you can actually learn a lot more tricks on YouTube." Because that was the only trick he knew. He only knew one trick. And I was like, oh, okay, cool. So I went on YouTube, and there's just a plethora of really badly taught magic tricks. And so I went on there. But it was still tutorials nonetheless. And it was a great stepping stone for me.
So when you do a trick, you obviously have to record yourself, right? Because you've got to watch yourself doing it and make sure we don't catch what you're doing.
Right. I actually record myself in slow motion.
Well, that's what I was going to ask you, because people out there, yeah. I'm not sophisticated enough to do it, but I know that younger people than me probably know how to watch a clip of you doing something and you know, just kind of play it almost in a frame-by-frame way to see if they can catch that moment you do the slight do something. Is that
that's
what you're trying to guard against?
Mm-hmm. So every time I record, I mean, I'm not that heavily guarded. If people do catch it, I always say, like, good job, like, that's great. And then that means I just need to be better. When I do practice, I do record myself in slow motion, and I watch myself and just kind of see, okay, is this obvious over here? And if it is, then I need to change it or get better or be faster.
And are you, so now that you and Colin are you know, partners, co-stars on the stage, do you share each other? Does he kind of tell you how he's doing what he's doing, and he knows how you're doing what you're doing? Or is it?
Oh, we all kind of know how we are, each other does each other's things. I mean, for a while, I had no idea how Colin was doing it. I literally thought he was paying people. I'm not even kidding.
Well,
I thought he was genuinely paying actors to go to the theater and pretend to be like, oh my God, yeah, that's my name, or oh, that's my birthday, yeah. But then when I was touring with him in New Zealand, that's when I realized, I was like, oh wait, no, he's not actually paying people. These are for real.
Wow.
And so in Broadway, same thing. I was like, wow, you're actually like really good at this.
Yeah, but the Broadway show you're talking about, that was the Illusionist bit that both of you were in, right?
That was on the that's right, that's correct. So that was the Illusionist is more of like an ensemble of magicians. So
right.
Yeah, I think it was about five total.
And but now the stage is yours. You don't have to, let me ask you, if this is a fair question, answer it. If it's not, don't. But, you know, I'm wowed by magic like so many people are. And I have friends who are mentalists, and I've attended those shows, and I've gotten pulled out of the audience because people know who I am, whatever. Mm-hmm. And I do some things. And of course, they do the guessing, like you said, you know, except I know that, no, you don't know my birthday, or you don't know these things about me. In trying to do my homework, here's my question for you, if you'd answer it. If we knew how you were doing what you were doing, I have this theory that in the end, we'd go, that's it?
No, I don't think for mine.
Okay.
I think for my stuff, you may go like, oh, that's it? Okay. And then you try it. And I'm like 100% sure you won't be able to do it on the first try. It'll probably take you maybe a year or 2 years to be able to do it.
Okay, so you can even tell me how you're doing it. I just probably don't have the dexterity you have to get it done.
No, I mean, I'm sure you have the dexterity. It just takes practice. It's like the piano. And I see practicing magic the exact same way practicing the piano. Like,
yeah.
In fact, a lot of the practice, just the amount of time it takes to practice. You know how they say the 10,000 hour thing?
Yeah, well, I didn't put that
in. It really applies for sleight of hand.
Gotcha.
For like close up magic, especially.
Yeah, when I learned piano as a youngster, it was frustrating. And I took for several years. And after a while, I went to a jazz teacher who he could just show me how to sort of fake the bass and stuff so I don't have to pay attention to real notes.
Right. Yeah.
It's a lot
easier. I mean, some of magic is like that too. Some magic is a lot of, they call it jazz magic. Which is exactly what you're talking about.
Yeah.
Which actually is difficult in its own right, I think, because there's a lot of creativity. But a lot of the stuff that I do is, I guess you can equate to classical piano. So it's a very structural, rigid, but also takes a lot of time and practice.
And I don't mean to be giving things away, but in checking with my colleague who just saw you, he did say that we will get some of your piano playing during the show. True?
Yep. Yeah. I kind of just do everything about my life, and I just tell people like, oh, I started as a pianist, and kind of just tell them my life story as I first started magic all the way till the end when I won AGT.
So when you were on
that journey.
Yeah, when you were on Fool Us with Penn and Teller, you did fool them, and Penn gave you quite the compliment. Not, I don't know that he said it on the show, but I'm going to read it to you in a second. But first, are you do you continue to be friendly with those guys, or you know, we all like to think you all know each other, or not really? You just
yeah. No, I mean, we talk backstage and stuff like after the performance, I know like his. I think Penn's wife came to my show and stuff like that. So it's we're not like best of friends, but yeah, we definitely. And our acquaintances.
And when you fooled him, did you tell him later, here's how I did it? Or you said, sorry, dude, not telling you?
I mean, no, they didn't ask me, but I have a feeling they already kind of knew that I knew how I did it.
Okay.
Yeah, it's more, the Foolish Trophy is more for, like, the show purposes rather than actually fooling them.
But meanwhile, you have one.
Yeah. Yeah.
I've seen them. They're kind of a little cheesy looking, but that's all right. Hey, so here's what Penn said about you. You might know this, but what he said about you was that you are part of a third wave of magicians bridging the gap between spectacle performances like Copperfield and Doug Henning, and the reactivity aspects of magicians like David Blaine. Do you agree with what Penn said? And for those who maybe don't know those names, I'm saying, what was he saying?
I mean, he's pretty much saying I'm a different generation of magician that's like coming out now. That's like performing. I believe he was mean like magic strictly to music and in kind of like a very artistic way, different from obviously Copperfield, which was doing main bigger illusions, and then the street magic generation, which was like kind of Chris Angel, David Blaine. They kind of came out in the early 2000s, late 1990s, and they did a lot of like just edgy close-up magic that really changed the entire world of magic. It changed it for me. I mean, David Blaine's a massive inspiration for me. So, yeah, and I guess I'm just, he's saying that I'm the next generation of magic. I think that's pretty much what he's saying.
And you know, and now as you continue to watch AGT, there are people who sort of follow in your footsteps, people trying to do what you do. So you're obviously a name that we're going to be talking about as people talk about some of these greats. What about people like, I mean, the ages ago, the Houdinis of the world, was that your thing, or did you sort of say, no, that's not really what I'm about?
No, I mean, I totally respect that. In fact, Houdini's he's legendary, you know, he's the guy who kind of started it all.
True.
He's amazing. Like people like Houdini and stuff like that. He kind of paved the way for magicians like Copperfield and Blaine.
By the way, we talked about piano, but is it also true that your first effort, I won't say your first love, your first effort was really violin? You got so frustrated, you smashed it, and that was the end of that?
Yeah. Yeah, I smashed it in half.
Much to the pleasure of your parents, right?
Yeah, they were like, oh my gosh, what's going on? And I'm like, no, I want to play the piano. They're like, oh, okay.
I love it. I know your family ultimately, I think, previously comes from Singapore, though. You were, am I right, you were born, lived for a great part of your life in Canada?
Yeah, Coquitlam, Vancouver.
Do you speak French?
No.
Okay. And so you come here. Is it about being here professionally? Is America going to remain your home? Or I think you actually have dual citizenship, right?
I actually grew up. I grew up in Boston, okay. A little town called Acton. Acton, Massachusetts, and I lived there. I lived there and grew up since I was 11. So I kind of pretty much consider that my childhood. I don't really remember too much of Canada because I guess you don't remember much things before you're 6 years old, like anything before that. But yeah, I actually grew up in Boston and I lived there most of my life. So that was fun. Absolutely. And then I moved to LA for AGT. Right after I won AGT, I moved to LA. And then I got the Vegas thing, which was 1 year later. So now I'm just slowly moving everything from LA to Vegas.
Great. Well, have you invested the million yet from AGT? You got that all properly invested?
I think I have it saved.
Okay.
I haven't really spent much of it yet.
Smart move. So you make it very clear just in watching you and your discussion and just, you know, following you on Instagram, that kind of thing. You got married last summer, I think, or towards the end of the summer to Casey. And she really has propelled you to be the person you are becoming, it seems.
Yeah. I mean, she's helping me in so many different ways, too. I mean, she was helping me during AGT, like all the background behind the scenes work. And now for the show, she's helping direct all the cameras and the show itself. So she's actually behind the scenes, like behind the theater, just kind of working.
Is that her background or is that her background or it's now her
background? No, she's actually, she was originally a dancer. For another magician, not me. Okay. She was a dancer for a mega illusionist called Franz Ferrari. He's really big in Asia. And then we met at a show that I happened to be performing in with Franz. And then, after that, she came here, and I guess she saw that I desperately needed help in other areas other than just magic. You know, there's so many other things that go on in theater that need to be done.
Yeah.
And she's smart. So she's able to just adapt and figure out what the show needs, what it's lacking, you know, stuff like that.
And the good news is you don't have to worry about it.
Yeah, it's good. It's good to have someone by our side that knows what they're doing and that cares.
I hear you. I need a Casey to help me. You know, let me also tell you, so the auditorium, as I mentioned to you, huge theater, 4,000 seats. It was, by the way, it's over 125 years old. Some incredible history on that stage. I can tell you about that some other time. But the reason I'm mentioning it to you is because there are people, you're going to have people up in the balcony. And like I said, when you go on the stage, you look up to that balcony and go, holy crap, you know, how far they are up there. So because what you do is close-up magic, and we need to watch you, and we need to watch your hands, you always play big theaters. So I want to put that to rest for anybody who says, wait a minute, if I'm not on the main floor, because I got to tell you, I looked and there are not a lot of main floor seats left, I'm not going to see anything. How can you assure people that they're just fine?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of the show, even in Vegas, even though it is an intimate theater, like intimate or not, the screen is just where most people look anyways at the end of the day. When I first started this out, I was like, oh man, it's not going to work out. Like, how am I going to perform for 900 people, 1,000 people? You know, I'm just doing close-up magic. And to my surprise, and with having a massive screen, it works. I don't know how. I still kind of am surprised at why it works, because I thought I'd be receiving a slew of complaints saying, oh, I hate having to just watch the screen. But apparently not. Apparently people like it. So.
We're used to it.
Yeah, so far, so good.
And apparently the newest incarnation of West Side Story on Broadway is almost all back screen. So I don't know. It's obviously where things are
really
going.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah, I guess so. I'm lucky in that sense, I guess. I mean, I feel like it's different, though, with magic, because when you're looking at a screen and something close up, there's something really raw and, I don't know, and just really honest about it, because you're so close up and the screen is just blowing up my finger. So you just see like a massive, like, I don't even know how many feet the screen is, but it's massive. And it's just, you're just seeing my fingers and the cards, and that's it. So you're able to completely scrutinize every single little mistake that I make on stage. Whereas when you're seeing an illusionist, like Copperfield and stuff like that, they're just so far away and there's nothing magnifying them at all. You know, if you're sitting at the back seat, you're just watching Copperfield, this tiny little person on stage, even though he's not that tiny, but you know, when you're that far away and he vanishes, it just, you're like, okay, well then maybe, you know, was there mirrors? Was there this? Was there that? You're kind of second guessing yourself. But when it's a screen and it's so massive and you're having this close up shot of my hands, there's just really no doubt. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And obviously you just said, and when I mess up, so those of us who watch you on March 14th,
I mess up all the time.
That was going to say.
So people see me mess up all the time. Yeah. It's like the piano. There's, you know, it's not easy. It's like piano. It's like juggling. It's not an easy art form. It's actually really difficult every time I get up on that stage.
Wow. I'm assuming that you, and I do know you do something at the beginning of the show. I don't know if you'll do it in Chicago, but there is something that kind of the audience can be involved when they first come in, where they're given some of that.
We actually try to get the entire audience involved all the time. Not just at the beginning, towards the middle with Colin and stuff like that. The whole audience usually gets involved. So there's a lot of audience participation in the theater, even if you're sitting in the balcony.
Which is great and so magical to be able, well, magical, no pun intended, to be able to do that. I know the love of your life, maybe next to Casey, is Natsu.
Yeah.
I'm all about dogs awesome. As well. So I just, does Natsu make any appearances or he's just backstage?
Yes, he does. No, he makes an appearance. Right now, we're just trying to get in comfortable with people on the stage, which he seems to be just fine. He seems to adapt really, really quickly, that guy. He's a really smart dog. and we're teaching him this card trick now, and he's wanting to do the card trick all the time because he knows he gets the snack afterwards. So he gets a treat.
Hey,
so he's just like, I want to do the card trick now.
And here's a little secret for you. So I had a dog who was kind of my soulmate dog. His name was Mertz, as in the I Love Lucy show, Mertz. I'm sure if you ask them to bring it to you, but out at the bar, they have kind of a coffee bar, which is named for me. And out at the bar, there's a drink named for my dog. That was the deal of me helping them. Was they name a drink for my dog. So when you're there, tell somebody with the auditorium that you want an Aloha Mertz.
An Aloha Mertz. Okay.
Aloha Mertz. It is, okay. And I'll tell you what it is. It is, it all has to be shipped in. It's New Orleans coffee with chicory, and it's mixed with macadamia nut liqueur from Hawaii. So
Casey's going to love that, by the way. She loves macadamia.
And you also, and I know you guys love Hawaii as well, because I've certainly seen enough pictures there. So the Aloha Mertz, it's what it's called. It's named for me, and maybe I'll share one with you when you're here, because it's you'll really like. In fact, when I told them about it, the guy that handles all that thought it was a little weird. So they ordered it, and he made it, and he goes, God, that's really good.
Right.
So you got to enjoy it.
I can't wait to try it then.
Yeah, okay. So you are going to be, I want to say this again, the Auditorium Theater on Saturday, March 14th at 7:30. People can get tickets at auditoriumtheater.org, and theater is spelled T-R-E, the proper English way, which I don't know if you knew that is required. You got to be really classy.
Yeah.
We can also
I learned it from Casey yesterday.
Yeah.
That is the right way.
Yeah. We can also see you on the WGN Morning News. You're going to make an appearance here on Thursday, March 12th at 9 a.m. I may be around that hour. We'll see. But by the way, I got to tell you, it's the number one morning news. You can add up all the viewers who watch Today's Show and Good Morning America and Fox, add them all together, and our numbers beat them. So you're going to reach a lot of people when you join us on our morning news.
Wow. Awesome.
And you are going to have an absolute blast in Chicago, that I can promise you. The amazing Shin Lim at the Auditorium Theater. Again, auditoriumtheater.org, Saturday, March 14th, 7:30. As far as I can see, it's one show only. I can see it selling well. I encourage people who are listening to this, man, go online now and get those tickets really quickly. This is a show you do not want to miss. Confirmed by one of the producers I work with, who said you were incredible. I expect to feel the same way. Shin, thank you so much.
Awesome. No, thank you so much. Really, really appreciate it.
We'll see you soon.
All right.
All right, we're going to shift gears now and talk about just an incredible show. Of course, it's written by Tracy Letts, so of course it's incredible, because the man hasn't written anything that isn't. But it is called Bug, and it is playing at the Steppenwolf Theater, where all the best theater goes on, through March 15th. That's an extended date, so if you have missed it, this is your opportunity to see it, because it's playing just a little bit longer, through March 15th. And joining me, the director of Bug, David Cromer, who's so well known here in Chicago. I mean, he's from Chicago initially, but David, I fell in love with you when you directed The Band's Visit, which of course got you a 2018 Tony Award for Best Direction of a Musical. You were recently here to do Next to Normal up at Writers Theater. You've got a million credentials, but thank you so much for joining me for this chat.
Oh, well, happy to be here.
And Namir Smallwood. And Namir, this was not my first experience with you at the Steppenwolf, having seen you in True West and Hot L Baltimore, which you were great in. Just so many shows. And you're amazing in this show as well. You've been, I know, an ensemble member for the last few years. Thank you, Namir Smallwood. Thank you for joining us as well.
Thank you for having me.
And so let me start, David, with you. It's a Tracy Letts play, so people know his work of August Osage County and Superior Donuts and all that. But this actually comes earlier on in his career. And while it's amazing because everything he does is amazing, I'll ask you this question. I felt it was different from what we see from him today. Do you agree, or what is different about this early work?
Oh, well, that's a good question. I think it is. I think it's, you know, I directed a play of Tracy's a couple of years ago called Man from Nebraska. It was a revival. And I asked him if he was going to make any changes, because I was a different person when I wrote it. I don't feel like I should really be writing a play that somebody else wrote, you know, that somebody else wrote. So yeah, I think that he was writing, I think sort of in the style of things that was our generation of theater. You know what I mean? He was writing about kind of like, aggressive, violent kind of like, ugly parts of society and city, you know, and so I think as a younger man, he was the things he thought were exciting to put on stage were different, and I think they've changed. He's never stopped being like really observant, really really funny, and really, you know, human. So I mean, it's similar in that way. He was also saying he you know, when he was a young man, he said, "Well, I have to I work at small theaters. These have to be small plays. It has to be a small room. Then you have to only be a few people in it." And he was then afforded the opportunity, as his life went on, to expand the palette, to go to a different room, to have more people on stage. So he just started, you know, changing the form. So yeah, I think it's an early play, but I think it's like, I think it's the first major work. You know what I mean? It's the first kind of really thrillingly, there's no fat on it anywhere. It's just everything serves everything else. It's like rigorously, interconnected, well-structured.
And Namir, so I'm going to come to you. We haven't really talked about what this play is about yet, so it's time to do that. Your character is Peter Evans, and of course you have this relationship that kind of comes out of nowhere with Carrie Coon, who plays Agnes White. The reason I asked David that question first, I'm going to ask you to tell our listeners what the show is about, but the thing is, as you're watching it, if you didn't know it was written, I think around 20 years ago or so, you would think it was written in the Trump era. And I'm not saying it's about Trump, but
yeah.
But I think you know why I'm asking that. So talk to me about what the play's about, and am I off base to say that?
No, you're not off base at all. I mean, the play, from my standpoint, is about two lonely people who basically fall in love. They meet and find each other and fall in love, but one has a particular issue, might be mental health, and that kind of rubs off on the other one, much like how love kind of does with people, mm-hmm. Like all of a sudden they have this speaking the same language, they eat the same foods, they, have the different, they have a similar idea of the world, outlook. And how it's fueled with, substances and,
Namir, here's the thing. Now, that answered the question. I get it. It's right. But when I just said it could have been written in today's political era, you kind of agreed with that. But that answer doesn't kind of reflect why it is we get that sense. I had a friend who said, I don't know if I can see Bug, because she just thought it was all about little bugs and she was afraid of it. And I said, I think it's kind of deeper than that.
Oh, yeah.
Bug, but it is also about little bugs.
Yeah, I guess you do get little bugs. But
and it's also about I remember when I was researching the play and reading it over and over again, I realized that Bug also is like the CIA bugs,
Yeah.
So it's just, a lot of conspiracy theories, and everything in our government is chock full of conspiracy theories. You can make a conspiracy theory about everything.
And that's how we end up in the Trump era in this play, in my opinion.
Right.
So,
absolutely.
Well, we are joined
and
by...
That used to be a fringe. Conspiracy theory was more of a fringe. It was in the margins of society when this play was written, and now it is...
Yeah, that's it. But that's exactly it. It's exactly it.
Yeah.
Well, we've been talking a little bit about this actress, and now she has joined us. Carrie Coon, who plays Agnes White in this show, is with us. Carrie, we've been talking about you.
Hi.
How are you?
Carrie.
I've been wrangling a toddler. I'm well. How are you guys?
Good.
So, the first question I asked David, and you're such a great person to come to. Look, we can say this. You're married to Tracy Letts, right? The playwright.
It's true.
You know him probably better than anybody.
I do.
And so I talked a little bit about sort of the difference between Tracy's writing then versus now. But let me ask you, as you and Tracy talked about this at home, and here you've got the lead in this show, what is his view? What has he shared with you that maybe even David and Namir don't know, where he sort of said, this is why this play needs to be done again today, years later, decades later?
I think he was on to something when he wrote it, and at the time that he wrote it 25 years ago, people thought it was this really wacky night out, but in fact, it's Tracy's most well-researched play that he's ever written. That's what he told me about it. So in terms of the psychology of not only paranoid schizophrenia, but also the conspiracy theories, he did a lot of research about those, and sort of knew that they were percolating underneath, and of course, he's from the Plain States. He's like myself. We're from working class families, and we have Trump elements in both of ours. Mm-hmm. So, it's about people looking for meaning, and if there's a void, if people are not fulfilled by some sort of intellectual stimulation, some sort of creative life, then something will rush to fill that void, and that includes white supremacy, conspiracy theories, any number of really terrifying things, and we're seeing that now as people have become really disaffected with what's going on.
And I'm going to stay with you for another question, Carrie. Am I right that in the original casting of this show, I won't ask you your age, but I'll say, but where you are age-wise is not who this role was written for, right? You kind of had to
That's
say,
correct.
No, I can do this.
Yeah, I'm a little young for it. She's 44. And, you know, one of the things Tracy was concerned about is that the that Namir and I were pretty close in age, and the age difference is really important to him, that Agnes is significantly older than Peter, and that Peter's sort of this younger presence in her life, maybe because it's less threatening that way or more unusual that way. So he was a little concerned about it. But, hey, you know, in Hollywood, I'm basically 44 or 54 sometimes, so it doesn't matter.
David, did any of that age difference or issues matter to you in terms of the rehearsal process or the casting?
I think Namir plays younger. I think Namir can play younger or older. Yeah. He's just a very versatile actor.
Well, I agree with that.
I think that is the case with. I think that's the case with both of you, which is you might not literally be. This is part of the writing that there is a difference in repeated experience.
I love that our toddler is chiming in, has some real strong thoughts about this.
And I have to talk about it. What does Haskell think about this?
Haskell wishes I never talked on the phone.
It is in the writing that there is a difference in repetition of experience in them, and it is then played by the actors. I feel Namir. I can sense Namir as he approaches the role, just like sort of youngs up a little bit, and Carrie acquires a weariness that she does not in life possess. and it plays. I never thought very hard about it. Because they were, you know, it's just, this play is these two people, and these actors are playing these two people, and that was never going to change. So it was always going to be how to do the play with these artists, and it was just to live it as truthfully as possible. It doesn't feel like the play's been affected anyway by the fact that on the calendar, these two are not at exactly the right ages, you know?
And Namir, we've got Randall Arney. There's other wonderful actors in this show who kind of make their appearances here and there. But your character, Peter, almost seems to be in his own world to me. I mean, there's all this interaction between everybody, but then Peter kind of just feels like he knows what's going on in the world and nobody else is getting it. Fair?
I would say that's fair. I feel like Peter has just gone through so much in his life. When you go through a lot of things, like you understand the world on a different plane than the average person, you know. So yeah. I feel like that's where Peter is, you know, and he's also trying to figure out whether or not, you know, who he can trust, you know, with his most inner, you know, in their deepest feelings, you know what I mean, and what he really thinks about things, because that hasn't been the case most of his life. He's just a weirdo.
Or maybe not. It depends what you think about the show, right? It depends how you watch that character.
Right.
You know, exactly. Carrie, I first fell in love with you when you did Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf, which was so amazing.
Thanks.
Yeah, it was 9 years ago, 10 years ago, something like that. You won 2013 Tony Award, I know, for Best Revival of a Play. It was just an amazing performance. I'm sort of curious. And other thing, and by the way, I was watching The Leftovers too. To this day, I don't quite understand what the hell I was watching as I watched that entire series, but it certainly gripped me, so I know I loved it. But this seems to be, maybe closer to Leftovers than Virginia Woolf, but this role brings a lot of challenges with it.
Sure does. Especially after you've been up for 12 hours at the top. Yeah, it's really challenging. I don't often play... Haskell, 1 second, please, my love. I don't often get to play characters who are of a lower class than I'm generally considered. A lot of the characters I play are quite erudite because I'm mildly articulate. So that's always a challenge to inhabit that truthfully in a way that doesn't feel like you are being condescending in any way. Yeah. And Tracy's writing isn't that. So we have the play under us to support that. But of course, there's also just that monster speech at the end is, you know, it's taken me a while to find my way through it. And every night I have to be really careful that it doesn't get ahead of me or that I don't get ahead of it. And I know from Virginia Woolf, because I did that play for 2 years, that if, you know, you're not going to feel it the same every night, and you have to be able to create it technically for the audience if you're not feeling it. It's just one of our secrets. And it's just physically very challenging. I eat before the show, and I eat at halftime. because I can't make it through the play without extra calories. Because, you know, as a woman, we're asked to cry very often, and I can't cry when I'm hungry.
Well, Lord knows you're drinking 17 cans of Coke during the course of the performance.
Well, those are seltzer. We fake it. Otherwise, we'd be all over the place. We'd be all, like, you know, spazzing out up there.
Well, I know you can't drink liquor, but really, you can't even drink Coke?
No, you got to keep it as even as you have to control all the factors you can control so that you can let go of the control of the play.
Oh, interesting. And David, you know, in the days of Martha Lavey, and go back a few years, and she was incredible, incredible and greatly missed.
Yeah.
But I also know there were certain levels of risk she would not take, I think. And what I mean by that is I remember a show where nudity was supposed to play a role in it. And as I hear the story, Martha kind of put the kibosh on that and said, no, we don't need to do that. Well, nudity does play a role here. And which of course is a challenge for the actors. But I'm sort of curious in maybe you can all address this. But is Steppenwolf in its last recent incarnation? Is it taking more risk, whatever? Or maybe not. Maybe that's just a sense that I have that's not right, David.
Well, I was not privy to that conversation. I'm not a member of the ensemble. I would say that, the premise of the question is interesting. I would say that you make a decision about what's important for each show. I don't think there was any kind of a blanket policy that one did not do nudity. Martha might have made a decision or offered an opinion about something at a certain time.
In a show-specific way.
It shows a specific way. And I also, my experience with her is she never issued an order in the four or five times I worked there under her. She never issued an order that was like, this will be this way, this will be that way. She offered advice as the artistic director. She would have strong opinions about things, very strong, because she was the artistic director, and that is her job. But I never had that experience. I think that, every show is different. I know, which is not really a clever observation. But every single show is different. I'll say one thing, because the people who would have the most to say about the nudity and Bug, obviously, would be these two. I was not invested in it as an important part of the play. We were just discussing it early on, and someone said, well, is it a deal breaker? Like, do we have to have the nudity? And I kind of went like, oh, I don't know. I'm not sure it's that important. And I asked Tracy, and he said, it is a deal breaker. I really want this.
Wow.
It's very important. It's interesting because he didn't say why, but he said it's very important. And so I kind of just said, yeah. And then I will turn the rest of the experience, which was difficult and complicated. I think Carrie and Namir can probably say more.
Well, let me go to Namir, and then we'll go to Carrie. Yeah. But I know, for example, Peter Schaefer's Equus, where nudity is a critical part. And I understand it's in the contract. You can't put that show on without the agreement to do what is required for it. So obviously Tracy, Schaefer's not around anymore for that, but here Tracy is. And so Namir, just in terms of that, your Steppenwolf was an intimate theater. It's like, what, 400 seats, maybe six rows. I mean, it really is a controlled kind of space. Well, more than that, but it still is an intimate play. What I was just talking about is going to be the new theater coming up. But what is your sense of playing in such an intimate space? Namir?
Really, I was freaking out about the nudity. I was asked to read this play by Anna maybe a year and a half ago, and it was like, I'm like, okay, well, there's nudity or whatever, and I'm like, I don't know how I feel about that. Well, can we get around that? Like, what kind of conversations can we have about that? And Tracy sent me an email, telling me, why he felt the nudity was important in the play and what he thought about it. And it really kind of like put me at ease. Like, it's really about the story of these people. It's not necessarily, that's a part of it, but it's not a huge part of it. And then I had, another 6-7 months to think about it. And as we got closer to rehearsal, I was just like, oh my God, oh my God, I don't know what's going to happen. I don't know, I don't know, I don't know. But when we got to it, it was just easy. And now it's like I have no thoughts about it at all. It's just I'm telling the story.
Well, it seems powerful and interesting.
It's the easiest part of the play.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and Carrie, the greatest tribute may be, look, it is your husband who is, who said, yes, Carrie, go do what you need to do for this show. So that may be the greatest emphasis of all.
Yes, you know, he really believes in humor and nudity in plays. He thinks that if the audience is laughing, they're listening. And Tracy really loves the idea of reminding them of their bodies and their mortality in the moment of a play. That it puts the play, I think, into thematically just a much larger conversation. But also, as Namir points out, it's really just the vulnerability and intimacy that's happening between those two characters. Yeah. There's nothing prurient about it. He doesn't make that choice just to be titillating. He makes that choice because it supports the structure of his play. And my husband's a structuralist. His plays are very, very sound. And this play is elegantly constructed. So for all of the blood and nudity and yelling, it's actually very elegant and very spare. Yeah. And it doesn't really stand extraneous beats in it. If you start to add a bunch of stuff on top of it, it really gets away from you. And I agree with Namir. I mean, I'm almost 40. And Tracy told me, you know, he was in Lady Chatterley's Lover. It's a rite of passage in Chicago that you're just naked on stage. It's kind of the old school Chicago way.
Yeah.
And he said, you're going to love it.
He said,
it's really liberating. Yeah, just something we all have to go through. And I have to say, it's true. I mean, you can't hide from anyone.
Yeah.
And you're like, well, here it is. Take it or leave it. You know,
now, I wonder if they would have made Tracy do
really
it before.
Really interesting. If I could just jump in and say one thing that was incredibly interesting in rehearsal, and I don't know, we talked around it. We had this brilliant intimacy coordinator who helps just kind of shape the room so that everyone understands, like, how we're doing it, when we're doing it, what are the parameters of it to protect the actors and to protect the show. But the big thing was I knew it was in the show, and we would – why it was there and what it was doing was mostly an intellectual exercise until the first time they did the scene naked.
Yeah,
and then it became, I thought, profoundly clear why it was and
Absolutely.
What it did to the play and what it did to the scene, and that to not have it would have been a would have been a shame. To not have it would have harmed the piece, you know.
Yeah,
and that was sort of for me, it was a wonderful day. I'm sure for you guys it was.
It was. It really was. True.
It was wonderful.
You know, Namir looked at me when it was over, and she said, "Oh, you just play the scene," and the scene came alive in a way it hadn't lived that way in the room yet.
Well, I think, and as an audience member, I can tell you. I mean, it just at first you see and you go, "Oh, wow, that's it's always stark to see that initially," and then. It just is what it is. It is part of what needs to happen up on the stage, along with everything.
And nobody who saw the original remembers it. They always say to Tracy, was there this much nudity in the play before?
Right.
It was always there. But even for the audience, it like you say, it's not the most important thing.
Right.
So they forget about it.
By the way, I'm imagining this couldn't have happened, David, in the original production, and I can't describe, I don't want to even give this away, but there's a scene change at the end, right? I mean, there's just kind of staging scene change, which is absolutely stunning. And I'm just sort of, that couldn't have happened 25 years ago. Did it? Or is that only the way Steppenwolf can do that now? Because it's just an amazing thing as it plays out.
I don't know. I don't have a history. I mean, I saw it. They did that transition. They've always done it. It's in the script. And my understanding is people have always attempted it. I believe it was off Broadway. It's funny. I don't remember. I used to remember it chapter and verse, and now I can't because I've done the play now. So that's kind of like disappeared for me a little bit. And I don't remember whether it happened or not. Here's the thing about Buck. I don't remember the nudity. I don't remember the flyers. I don't remember any of that. I remember the love story. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I watch people who need to matter find someone who helps them matter, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I will just say...
I know that's not what you asked, but I mean, like, I don't remember. I think that it's done. I think that it's done. Everyone, you know, it's a fun challenge.
It's stunning to see. It really is stunning to see. And I want to encourage everybody to see it, by the way. And by the way, Carrie, Tracy, if he wants to write a play for me and Namir, I'll take care of the humor and he can take care of the nudity, all right? So
you got it.
that'll play out well. Carrie, what's coming up for you next is the Ghostbusters film, right, with Paul Rudd?
That's it. Yes, I have another film that came out at Sundance called The Nest with Jude Law.
Yeah.
Don't know when that will be distributed, but for sure Ghostbusters will be coming out. Ghostbusters Afterlife, July 2020.
It's too bad you're working with these nobodies like Paul Rudd and Jude Law and Ben Affleck from Gone Girl. Yeah. But, try and meet somebody that's got some influence.
I work with very attractive men. I don't know how this happened. My My family's really surprised.
Well, maybe it's
since
the play
I got
you
kicked out of ladies' rooms till I was 17 and a half.
Well, maybe if Tracy writes one for you and me, I'll be the exception to this rule that you've been having. And by the way, let Tracy know he was wonderful in Ford versus Ferrari, too. And no nudity, but he did a great job in Ford versus Ferrari.
Great performance, isn't it? I love that performance. I think it's really
Should have gotten more awards than it did. It really deserved. It was wonderful.
I agree.
Namir, what is
that? I at least agree.
Yes. What is up next for you, Namir?
Auditioning.
Okay.
And Actors Life. Yeah.
You're doing True West again, Namir.
Oh, yes. So, yeah, we're doing True West again.
Do that one. And, David, you're coming back to Chicago to do a little thing up at Writers Theater.
Yeah, you are. Namir, where are you doing True West?
The Galway Arts Festival, International Arts Festival.
Oh, okay. Right. I've been to that. Yeah, that's great.
What, you know what I love about these podcasts?
Yeah, I'm coming to Writers. I'm doing some plays.
All right. I love the fact working with Michael.
For me.
What's that? And Michael Halberstam does such a great job up there. I love the podcast because you all learn from each other, too, while we're talking. Isn't that great? So with my deep thanks to Kerry Coon, I know you've got a lot going on as we speak. So thank you so much for joining me.
Thanks for having us.
And my pleasure to have you and Haskell. By the way, I have a good friend who's a retired judge now, but his name is Haskell. I'm going to let him know that there's a little child named Haskell.
Yeah. It sort of peaked in the 1930s, so it's coming back. I've heard of a couple more.
I hope so. I
don't have Warby Parker glasses as well.
Yes, I've got those too. Namir Smallwood, thank you. And David Cromer, just so love
thank
your
you.
Work. So thank you all. I encourage everybody, check out Bug if you have not. It's an experience, as you can tell from this conversation, that you want to have over at the Steppenwolf Theater. It's only through March 15th. Steppenwolf.org is where you can get tickets for it. Thank you all for the time that you spent with me. Continue to break legs in such an incredible production. I look forward to seeing you all on stage again soon. And David, sing your direction. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
Have a good one.
Well, if you want to know more about what we've talked about here, follow me on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, at Paul Lisnek. That's PaulLisnek. And I'd love to hear your comments or topic suggestions for future podcasts. You can also go to my website, paullisnek.tv. And hey, don't forget to hit subscribe on WGN Plus and iTunes. And tune in each week to hear more insider scoop coming to you from behind the curtain.